Ratchet Dawson isms, and yes, you see that lady over there, you know who she is, and if you don't, go back to season one and check it out. But I have to introduce our illustrious guest. He's back, Dr. Tay, part two. Welcome back, Dr. Tay.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me back.
And just
I definitely enjoyed myself last time.
Well, these people might not have seen you last time, but in case, just in case, tell them who you is and what you do and why you're here.
Okay, so I am Dr. Tay Bassett. I am a psychologist, professor, what else? Entrepreneur, and all of that other good stuff. But I'm here today as the psychologist. Go back to season one and you can learn more about me and mental health and all that good stuff. And I'm so glad to be back with all of you.
Most of you.
I'm joking.
We're not gonna ask.
Gotta love the person who has to give a disclaimer.
She's an educated Negro. Education.
As we always start, guys. First of all, thank you for coming back. We appreciate you giving us all the knowledge that you gave us last episode. So much so that we had to bring you back because we got Mo to ask you. But before we get into it, we have to introduce ourselves. As always, you know, this is Harlem Luke Skywalker in the building. Harlem.
First Lady Ramona.
Oh, Uptown Ratchet Poppy in the building. Harlem.
Hollywood Dre. Brooklyn. We in there.
Yeah, you already heard from Miss Dr. Tay. So,
wait, everybody says where they're from. Do I get to say where I'm from?
Queens. Okay, Queens.
You know Nori?
No.
I didn't say where I was from.
You know Nas?
No.
Right, based on these, no. Based on these questions, we need Mr.
Disclaimer
himself. The disclaimer clean himself.
So before one more question about Queens.
Oh my gosh. He completely ignored everything that you just please, said.
Do you know where the disrespectful?
I watch Power Live. Do you know where the Queens Child Project is at?
Yo. start the disclaimer.
The thoughts and opinions of Uptown Brown, Ratchet Poppy, Mr. Racis, El Capitan, whatever you want to call me.
Mr. Disclaimer.
Sure, why not? We got another one. solely the thoughts and opinions of me and do not reflect upon the lovely cast of Ratchet Thoughts and Isms or Dr. Tay.
Yes!
Yeah!
Thank you, that was great.
Love it. I felt that in my soul this time. I felt that one.
He acted like he meant that one.
Yes.
That was your best one.
So good.
I appreciate the disclaimer.
So, last time we spoke a lot about coping and the different type of levels of coping and different ways to identify and how to do those things to help you with whatever might be ailing you at that time, right? So, some of our illustrious audience members asked us about some trauma type questions.
Yes.
Right? And before we get into what type of questions, I guess it's always good to probably start on what is trauma?
Yes. I feel like we might have gone over that in season one, but repetition is the key to learning. So trauma is not what you experience. Trauma is not the event that you've experienced. Trauma is your response to said experience. So that's why there are 10 people can experience the same situation and not everyone is going to have a trauma response.
Right.
So trauma is the response you have. A trauma response includes flashbacks, nightmares, panic attacks, anxiety, interpersonal difficulties, things like that. So of course, you don't need to have all of those symptoms, but those are symptoms of a trauma response.
I have a question.
Go ahead. Does it have to do with Queens?
No. Okay. Not with Queens.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So I've been watching BMF a lot. So how do you think Meech is dealing with the trauma of what happened to his brother?
I'd have to know what happened to his brother.
You ain't been watching BMF?
He got killed?
No, I don't want to spoil it for you. But if you've been, you know what I'm saying, shout out to 50, shout out to all the BMF crew. But so how you think, you know what I'm saying, that me?
She just said that she
I don't watch it.
His brother got shot in the face.
You don't know the story, Nonce, so you can't give an opinion to it.
I'm
rooting that was a spoiler alert for people.
Right, it was.
Y'all need to be watching BMF. Y'all all should be up on this. Like, y'all making me look bad.
So I have a question, Dr. Tate. It's not about
yes,
Queens.
Thank
it's not
you.
About Queens.
Save us.
So, can I ask you a question as a professional? Can you look at someone or have a conversation with someone and know that they're going through trauma or they need therapy just by just regular everyday conversation? Like, oh, how's the kids? Or can you tell? Can you feed off of it?
That is a very good question. And I think it's one of, the answer is it depends. So if you're a professional, yes, you can kind of discern different, not activities, but behaviors of a person. It might not tell you that they've experienced a traumatic situation, but they're going through some kind of psychological distress.
Okay.
If you are a layperson and you're not trained, there are different trainings that you can go through. There's like psychological first aid, which is basically like CPR, but wow. for emotions.
Wow.
So if you've gone through psychological first aid, then you know kind of things to look for so that you can point a person in the right direction
right,
so that
right.
they can get help. Yep. So the person who's not trained, who you know hasn't gone through psychological first aid or mental health first aid, they might not know.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's take it a step further. If a person has experienced a traumatic situation from childhood
mm-hmm.
and they've been presenting with a trauma response all their life,
right.
people probably aren't going to realize it because that's
but
they're gonna say
though.
I could, but just think of the layperson. If this person has been this way their whole life, they're
that's
gonna say,
they
oh
are.
Well that's just how they are.
Because yeah. they normalized it.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Right.
Right. When you have engaged or been in a an adverse situation or a maladaptive situation for so long and it becomes normal,
right.
you're going to accept that as your norm, even though...
Is that word you just said, what?
Maladaptive.
I don't know what that means.
Mal meaning bad, adaptive meaning, you know, kind of... So it's something that hinders you.
Bad habit, maybe?
Right. So a maladaptive habit, something that...
Terrible way to adjust.
Look at you!
Y'all smart. I didn't know when... Y'all smart, man.
So if
I did.
So for parents and that you know see their kids every day and
mm-hmm.
let's say they witness something that is something that they normally wouldn't witness. Like let's say a good friend of theirs committed suicide, right?
Mm-hmm. Died by suicide.
Yeah.
There's been changes in like the language.
Right.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like
it's
jump
okay.
in,
no,
but
you're good.
You know, there has been a lot of people who are surviving family members of those who have died by suicide.
Right.
And they are really active in, you know, changing the language because if you say that someone has committed suicide, it makes it seem like it was a choice, but it has such a negative connotation. And the families want to honor the memory of their loved one and not to, you know, have their death be sullied by like the negative. So like died by suicide, and there's just certain ways you go about saying it. So just
okay. No, I wasn't aware of that. That's
mm-hmm.
interesting.
So my question was, her friend died by suicide,
mm-hmm.
and they start to act out of character now.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that parents should probably look to, like, are there signs? Is that a sign that I probably need to bring them to a professional to kind of talk these things out because, you know, that was their close friend. And obviously, no one goes into life thinking that that would happen, right?
So. Right. Yeah, there are definitely signs. I mean, I think even as a clinician, if there is a marked or significant change from the person's norm, then that maybe that's not a cause for you to say, okay, you need to see a therapist, you need to take meds, but at least inquire further, ask questions. And I think, as you mentioned, a parent, as parents, it's important that we are mindful of how, like, what makes our child tick and what their norms are. So, you know, we live in a society where parents work multiple jobs and we might not, you know, be around our children, but
right.
we have to make the effort to know them, because if you know them, then it's easier for you to notice a change. If you're not there and you're not mindful, then your child could be going through something, they could have experienced something traumatic, and you don't see the change, and then they end up living and functioning in this trauma response.
Oh, but I think that's so tough, because like you said, most adults have to work, right?
Yes.
And they can't be in the house as much as they would like to, because they gotta pay bills.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I have to interject, because I work, I was going to school too, I'm a single mom, and I know my daughter. Like, I just know her energy, and I could come home and she'll say my name, and just the way she says my name, like, what happened today? What happened? Nothing, mom. No, what happened?
Right.
Something happened. No, it didn't. Yes, it did. So you don't want to talk about it.
Right.
Something happened today, because you're different.
Yes.
And then later on that night, she will come to me and she'll be like, no, mom. Or tomorrow, the next day, she'll come to me and she'll tell me what happened, but I just know my child.
That's because you're in tune. Everybody's not in tune. Everybody's not in tune.
But it's important to be, and even if we, you know, they say that it takes a village to raise a child. You know, even if you are working, maybe there's grandma or auntie or uncle, if you have godparents, somebody's got to know what's going on with this child enough to see the difference. And I think that's a big issue when we don't, when we're not connected to our children, and not our natural children, but our nieces, our nephews, and things like that. When we're not connected to them, we miss things. So let's say the child was abused, sexually molested, or whatever. If we're not connected to them well enough to see the change, then they're carrying that weight. And then we wonder why they're presenting with certain behaviors when they're adults. Because this traumatic occurrence went unchecked and unaddressed for so long.
Right.
And especially if it happened during childhood, they're not gonna come out and say it.
So is that safe to say that the longer it takes for therapy, the harder the breakthrough? Could I interject with that? Or are you saying that?
Maybe not the harder the breakthrough. You might have more resistance on behalf of the person who is in therapy. First of all, it's going to be depending on their background, their ethnic backgrounds, and, you know, whether they're in church. It might be difficult to get them into therapy.
Is it easier for children than it is for adults to break through?
When you say breakthrough, what do you mean?
To see a change.
Okay. I would say yes with children, because children are malleable.
Right.
So they're a lot more impressionable, so it's more likely that you can change the trajectory of what they're doing, what they're thinking.
Adults be too set in their ways.
Right. Exactly. You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Right.
Like, but children, they're more malleable. Does that mean that they're going to be perfect in adulthood? Absolutely not. But I think the earlier, like with education, early intervention is key.
Right.
The earlier you intervene, the better the prognosis and the outcome is going to be. But you have to know enough to make that intervention. Right.
But does that also depend on who you match your child up with?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's therapy is a relationship.
Shit. Oh, wait.
Sorry.
I'm like, I didn't need to fail.
Sorry. Oh my God, that part. Okay, I'm sorry
about this. Oh my goodness. But therapy is a type of relationship. And if there's no connection, if the child or anyone for that matter doesn't feel like they are being related to and understood, then it's going to be a waste of time and effort and money. So absolutely, it's important that there's a connection. If you see that your child isn't responding, like in the first four sessions, find someone else and make sure that the therapy is appropriate for the child. Like, especially if the child has experienced something traumatic, there's something called trauma-focused CBT or cognitive behavior therapy. Make sure it's something that the child is going to respond to. Even play therapy. It's not just a matter of, oh, you know, the therapist, I take the kid to therapy and they play checkers every day. No, while they're playing, they're having conversation, or while the child is drawing, what they draw can be, you know, can open up Pandora's box, so to speak.
So, you can teach an old dog new tricks if they want to learn. That's that. And
Wait. Does anyone have a mic that we can drop? Because Luke just like, he's like, first of all.
As someone who has recently made breakthroughs in some of the things that I am working on as far as the trauma that I've experienced. I'm like, yeah, you can do it if you
want to
get.
If you want to, yes.
If you want to.
I sit corrected, yes, absolutely.
And secondly, since we started talking about adults, is it, are there things you can see in adults to let, like, regular people be like, ooh, they might be suffering from, or is it that's just a
therapist?
Someone who's a professional to be like.
No, absolutely not. I mean, of course, there's certain things that only a professional will be able to assess. But like I mentioned earlier, there are programs like Mental Health First Aid, and you can see what's going on.
It's called Mental Health First Aid. You can Google that and find information on that.
Absolutely. And if you live in New York City, you might have heard of the Thrive program, and they were training people in Mental Health First Aid for free. Nice. But once the pandemic hit, they kind of shifted their efforts. If anyone is interested in that training, it's Mental Health First Aid, and you can go to mentalhealthfirstaid.org and you can search trainings based on your zip code. And it's an 8-hour training, but they do have hybrid trainings. They have virtual, they have in-person, they have hybrid, and you can get a certification that lasts for 3 years, and you'll be able to see the warning signs and symptoms. Of course, you won't be equipped to treat, but you'll be able to see someone and point them in the right direction.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna get certified.
So that's one technique we can use.
That sounds scary.
Please do.
Before going to therapy.
What'd you say?
That's one technique we can use before actually going to therapy. We can go.
Well, actually, before, in the sense that if someone is certified in Mental Health First Aid, they will be able to point you in the right direction of therapy.
I'm gonna get certified in Mental Health First Aid.
What?
Yeah, do it.
Hmm? I feel like
it sounds like growth.
I want to help people.
I feel like there's a shoe that's about to drop.
I want to help all my friends. I love you guys.
So we were talking about ways to identify an adult. Possible signs on trauma.
Yes. Possibly? So possibly. So of course, being trained in like mental health first aid, and just being open to learn. If there are people who are in your circle, people who are loved ones, like, you'll notice that there's a change. And ask questions. Like, you'd be surprised what kind of responses you'd get when you ask questions. Especially if a person is having suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. When you ask those serious but difficult questions, like, do you want to kill yourself? I know.
Can you actually say that and not like, is that okay?
It's best that you ask directly, because if you like tiptoe around it, like, so like, do you want to hurt yourself? And a person can say, yes, I want to hurt myself, but maybe they don't want to kill themselves. There's a difference.
I was going to ask you, is there such a thing as committing suicide but not dying? Like,
it's attempting.
Is it a cry for help? Is it an attention seeker? I try to kill myself 3 times. Like, how did you really try to kill yourself?
It could be attention seeking. Yeah. Maybe it's a cry for help, or right. Maybe the person.
If you wanted to kill yourself, you would.
Or maybe the person just didn't succeed.
But how could you not? I don't know.
It depends on how. Like, there are different groups of people, different demographics of people, are more likely to use different methods. And of course, this is, now I have to give the disclaimer. We're not telling people how to go about it. Right. These are just facts. This is just research. Right. So for example, women are more likely to use less lethal means. Mm-hmm. So pills, alcohol. Mm-hmm. Men are more likely to use more lethal means. So like jumping or, yes. So I guess it depends on the means. Some people will, you know, slit their wrist. It depends on how they do it and if it's the right place.
I don't know anyone personally that tried to commit suicide, but for you to attempt to do it 3 times, like, that takes guts, in my opinion, to want to kill yourself willingly. And for you to want to do that 3 times, I feel like, how do you walk around in the world knowing that she was going to be here? Like,
it's difficult.
Yeah.
That's some people feel like there's nothing else that they can do. There's no other option. And of course, as a clinician, that's what I am, right? Clinician. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that there are other options. There's help, there's inpatient programs, there's outpatient programs, but some people, either they don't have access to that information or they are just so consumed by their negative thoughts and their negative experiences and their traumas that they feel like the only way they can get relief is by dying by their own hand.
So I have a question. This is a serious question, yeah. So, I have this theory that human beings have like a narcissistic tendency to when ever they're going through some sort of traumatic event that they can't see outside of themselves, and they feel like whatever they're going through is the worst thing ever, and that it's no one else that's going through something else. Absolutely. That's worse than them, when the reality is there's always somebody going through something worse than them.
Absolutely.
Was that a question or a statement?
That's a question. So do you think that's the reason why people get so consumed within their own situations that's the narrative that they tell themselves, and that's why they go towards suicide?
Sometimes, absolutely. Like, if they don't have the access or, you know, the willingness to access certain services, they're going to think that they're the only person that's going through this. Now, you said a mouthful. So as far as, you know, they're the only person that's going through this, that's where group therapy is really helpful. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't like group therapy. I'm not telling my business. But one of the great things about group therapy is realizing that you're in a space where other people have experienced something similar. Mm-hmm. So even if no one opens their mouths, you can go in with the assumption that all of these people have experienced something similar, something painful. I used to lead a trauma group. Even though you might not know what everyone's trauma is, everyone here has gone through something.
They're there because they've been through something.
Exactly. Okay. So that's one great thing about group therapy. At the very least, one of the therapeutic qualities is that you feel a part of a group. You feel like you're not alone. Now, the part about there's always someone else going through something worse. Yeah, of course. But in that moment, it's not necessarily helpful to minimize what a person is experiencing by comparing what they're going through to what others are going through. Mm-hmm. Because then that's minimizing your emotional experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not validating it.
Exactly. Right. And sometimes, most times, it's helpful to validate what you're experiencing, because a person can have a wide range of emotions, but some of those are valid. Right. And we need to have that validation, whether it comes from within or without. Sometimes you just need to know that you're well within your right to feel that way. I say that a lot to my clients. Okay. Validation is important, because then a person feels like, you know, it's okay for me to feel this way.
Okay.
And then they can grow from that.
So you mentioned, as adults, if you talk to your friends or loved ones to see if you see a change, mm-hmm. and then you said it's okay to ask them directly.
Yes.
Are you thinking of killing yourself?
Especially when it comes to suicide.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because what is it that parents used to say? Straight talk gets straight responses or straight answers. Maybe I made it up. But with regard to suicidal thoughts, you have to ask those direct questions, because that's how you're going to get the direct response. Hurting yourself is not the same as suicidal thoughts. Of course, they're not mutually exclusive, but someone can hurt themselves, say, oh, you know, I want to cut myself. That's non-suicidal self-harm.
They're cutters.
Yeah. Right. Non-suicidal self-harm is different from having suicidal thoughts and having the intent and the plan and all of that.
It's not a slippery slope?
No, because, can I just say one thing? When I was younger, I used to go through a lot of heartache and I used to cry a lot and to go through a lot of things. And my therapy was to get a tattoo. And the reason why I would get a tattoo because I wanted to feel pain. So for me to get rid of that pain that this person caused me, I would get a tattoo.
Mm.
And I understand the cutter equation of that, because it kind of makes sense to me. But mm-hmm. I was like, I need to stop doing this, because I'm going to have a whole body full of tattoos by something.
No.
So I was like, I need to find a different way to cope with this. I was getting tattoos after tattoos. No. Relationship broke up, tattoo, I want to feel pain. I had to feel pain to get over that pain. And I was getting tattoos.
Can I ask you a question? How many tattoos you got?
Stop it.
I have 5.
Yeah, 5. Mm-hmm. I got at least 40% of my body covered. Maybe that's your therapy. I never really, and I know for at least.
Can you relate? Like,
I can't relate.
The light bulb went off?
Like, that's why I asked that.
Tattoos?
Oh. He just had a breakthrough! Woo! An RTI breakthrough. We had intervention.
I'm gonna tell you why, right? Because the tattoo that I got for Slim definitely was a coping mechanism. Y'all know Slim, you know what I'm saying? Was definitely a coping as to get myself through that. I was the first one out of our whole squad to get a Slim tattoo. Because you remember there was a point in our life when we were younger where I was with him every day. Shout out to, you know what I'm saying, Slim Boogie, you know what I'm saying? My brother, RIP, you know what I'm saying? But it was a point where I was with him every day for like a year straight. Every day of my life, I was with him. So when he passed, like, it hurt me. So, like, I had to run out and get a tattoo. Mm-hmm. But, like, I could definitely remember other traumatic moments in my life where I went out to get inked.
Yeah, because it's pain.
So
it's pain.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got to replace the pain with something
yes.
else.
Yes. And that's why that's people crazy. Often self-harm. And it's not just cutting. People will burn themselves with cigarettes and things like that. Right. Because they would rather experience the physical pain than to experience the emotional pain. Absolutely. Because the physical pain, you can kind of deal with that a little bit better. Like you can put medication on it or something like that. But like I have one tattoo, and the one tattoo that I have was a direct response to a trauma.
Absolutely.
So, and I think what you did was very mature and insightful because you realized I'm doing this as a direct response to pain.
I need to stop.
I did it too. I did it too. I was mature and insightful. I did it.
So were all your tats a direct response to some kind of pain or traumatic event?
Well, I can tell you my very first one was definitely, my very first one when I was 15 years old was definitely a response to a traumatic event.
Was that the one that you were just referring to?
No.
Oh, okay. That wasn't my first.
Okay.
That probably was maybe like my 8th or 10th.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And also, I got piercings a lot too. I can take the piercings out and still feel pain without having a tattoo for life. Let's do that. I got my tongue pierced twice, got my nose pierced three times, got this pierced, got my belly button pierced.
What else?
That's it.
I was waiting for them to start asking.
So is there anything else that we can look for or look at?
I said that's it.
Oh my gosh.
Is there anything else that we should look for that we can do besides asking directly or?
Ask directly, know the person, be educated, be open to being educated about these things. You don't have to go out and get a doctorate in psychology and practice, but just know, like go to trainings, you know, they're free webinars so that you can be mindful. And even if it's not your loved one, like I think at our core as humans, like we want to see others succeed. And that could probably be a completely separate episode if you don't. But if you see someone on the 7 train, I mean, well, the 7 train doesn't come to Harlem. We can make it Harlem relevant. Whatever train, what?
Three train, my nigga.
The three.
Watch out.
You gotta sleep that.
Okay, we gotta stay on brand. But the 3 train, like you see someone who's clearly responding to internal.
It was so harsh.
I know, it's all right.
2 train.
Right. Anyway, like you can see someone who's clearly responding to internal stimuli and like they're, you know, they're talking to themselves. You can, you know, maybe engage them in conversation.
I'm not doing that, Dr. Tay. Hell no, Dr. Tay. If somebody's talking to themselves in a 2 train, I'm not engaging. Sorry. Sister. I'm just being honest. I'm not doing that.
You're right. And you know what? You're well within your right. Everyone has their limitations. If you feel like you're
going to put yourself downtown and they look like they came from Bellevue.
Listen, I'm not doing that.
But if you feel like it's going to put you in danger, and that's something that's
danger.
What's the benefit of engaging to someone who's talking to yourself in a 2 train? What's the benefit to do that?
Not just engaging, but engaging with the purpose of pointing them in the direction of health. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, because I'm trained, like I might be more inclined. Now, I'll be honest, when I'm on the E train, I'm not working. What did I miss?
No, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you this time.
It wasn't me.
But like, I'm not working, but you know, I might, if someone is really being disruptive on the train and they're saying like, yelling obscenities or whatever.
Watch yourself!
Prince got a hair.
Okay, let's go with that. They might just have
danger.
They might just have, what do you call it?
Tourette's.
Music Tourette's, right? Or maybe they're hearing voices telling them to harm someone.
I'm not talking to them.
Well,
I hear your voice, I'm gonna kill you, bitch. I'm like, oh no, wait, Dr. Tate told me to intervene. Wait, okay. Let's call something.
If you're going to be in danger, then no. You exit stage left. I don't care if the train is moving, go between trains, whatever. But again, it's about asking the direct questions. And if you're trained in mental health first aid, then cool. If you're not trained,
right, it's difficult.
Then don't. Just make sure that you separate yourself from that situation as best as possible.
Go on to the next car.
But
not make it worse.
But you could have someone who's responding to the voices in their head, but the heads.
Give them an edible.
The voices could be harmless. Not all voices are command hallucinations, like, you know, kill that person or harm that person. Okay. Some of them are self-deprecating, okay, which could lead them to harm themselves. Or some of them are just like, you know, just voices. Some of them is just like white noise.
Gotcha.
So, you know, we can't assume, and that's a widely spread myth that people who, and I'm kind of deviating, but if a person has psychotic symptoms and they're hearing voices and they're seeing things, we automatically assume that they're dangerous. But they're no more dangerous than people who don't have a diagnosis. That's just an assumption for people who just don't know. So things that are out of the norm, you know, maybe.
I don't think it's dangerous. I think it's kind of scary, though. And sometimes I'm
not for a New Yorker,
someone
though.
Someone hears voices. No,
because we see it often. Like,
if I see that on the train, I'm not really like, feel like I'm in danger, but I'm a little scared. Like, it's kind of scary to see that, you know, because it's not normal behavior. Mm-hmm. To see someone talking to himself.
Does it make you grab your pepper spray?
No, but it just makes me a little scary. It's a little scary sometimes. But
uncomfortable because
uncomfortable,
you don't.
Yeah,
it's the fear of the unknown. You don't know if the person can go from 0 to 100.
Right, that's what it is.
Maybe they're just having a conversation with themselves.
Right.
Or maybe they are agitated. Like, I was on a train late with some friends in like high school or whatever, and this guy was clearly agitated. And one of my friends who was with me, he laughed. And I don't know if he was laughing at the guy or laughing at something, but the guy threw his beer on us.
See?
So that was a situation where maybe he was just having a conversation with himself and he was fine. But then something in his environment agitated him or exacerbated what he was already going through, and we all ended up smelling
Trey,
like
butt. Trey, you quiet over there,
Trey. I'm just listening.
Y'all didn't jump in.
No, you got off the train.
Y'all didn't jump on?
No, I didn't. I'm not a fighter.
So, so how do you know if a person needs therapy as opposed to needing to see like a psychiatrist?
Okay, so for a lay person, you will not be able to determine if a person needs therapy or needs to see a psychiatrist. The difference is that therapy is talk therapy, psychiatrist is medicinal. Well, wait. Not leaves, but you know, not that kind of medicinal.
You said for a layperson, and that's for like, do you eat the potato chips or waffles? Or?
Someone who's not trained, like a psychologist or a social worker or whatever, if you are not one of those people, then you are unable to determine whether or not a person will be fine with just talk therapy or if they need medication to supplement that.
Okay.
But some people do, like the people who are. Excuse me, hearing voices. If you're hearing voices, you're not gonna be able to respond and apply what me, your therapist, is sharing with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay, probably
wait,
not.
Wait. The reason why I'm saying that, you know, might be the Holy Ghost talking to you. I'm sorry.
What if I don't hear voices, but I hear music in my head?
We're not talking about
I hear music in my head all the time.
Yeah, that's different. But what I'm saying is if it's so much, if you're hearing whatever it is, so much so that you are unable to attend to what's going on in the here and now,
okay,
then you might need some medication to bring you back to your baseline so that you can hear, receive, and apply what you're learning.
Is talking to yourself a little baseline, borderline psychotic or no?
No. I mean, one of the ways that we determine if a person... So one of the ways that we determine if something is...
So I need to take the 3 train.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
You're right.
The 3 train.
Like the Kermit the Frog.
Stop. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Tate. Sorry.
Okay. I swear to God.
So the way that we determine if a person has a psychological disorder mm-hmm. is if it impairs their functioning. So if you talk to self and self says, huh, mm-hmm. but you're still able to engage in your activities of daily living and you're able to lead a full life, then it, you know, it's not harming you. You're still able to function. Mm-hmm. But if you're responding to the, you know, the folks in your head, the council, and you know they're responding back to you and they're telling you to do things that are not socially acceptable, then that
not trying to be funny, but to me it sounds like you're a functioning psychopath.
Like no, psychopath is different from someone who's
schizophrenic. Functioning schizophrenic, because they have functioning alcoholics, they have functioning
right. There are people
addicts,
who hear voices,
but it's functioning.
But
schizophrenic,
they're checking you out. They're checking you out at Rite Aid. They
so
might
functioning.
They are functioning, okay. Absolutely. Okay. There
but
are
what
people,
if I hear music?
That's, I'm, but you're able to function. You're able to do your job.
It stops
you're
me when I'm doing this show.
You have other things that are possibly affecting your functioning.
Why are you blending my mug?
So, this mug's I'm sorry,
Dr. Taylor. What's in the mug?
So can I ask you a question?
What was in okay. the mug? That's exactly the problem.
About to take.
Question. If you're functioning, does it mean that you don't, you should not seek help since you're functioning?
That is a great question.
Do you not seek help if, as long as you're functioning?
Why not necessarily, because I think everyone, could benefit from therapy
absolutely.
To better understand what's going on.
Absolutely.
Because you might think that you're functioning optimally when
you
you're not, when you're barely functioning, or you're functioning in what you think is normal when in actuality it's not normal at all.
Right.
Good point.
So who's to say what's normal and what's unnormal?
It's not for a psychologist or a mental health professional to determine what's normal. We can determine what is not acceptable, but healthy. So it's not a matter of normal. Like, you're not gonna come into my office and I say, well, that ain't normal, sis. But when we are assessing, like, people, there's a, it's NWL. Within normal limits. So you can have a range of emotions or a range of behaviors, but if they're within normal limits, then you're good. But if they're outside of those limits and they hinder your functioning, then it's not normal. But no ethical therapist is gonna say, oh yeah, that's not.
So as long as you NWO, NWA, you all right?
My word.
What's that? Coming. So Dr. Tate, I always hate to come to this point in the show.
Oh, man.
Damn,
Gina.
Damn, Gina, I will marry you.
I don't ever want a proposal like that. Lord have mercy. Like... Let's not talk about proposals. Good job.
We come to our final thoughts.
I was called bougie during my proposal. I don't remember anything else.
Dr. Tate.
Oh, good job.
Part two with us. Final thoughts, guys. Well, what
is that a traumatic moment?
Traumatic, I swear. Hollywood Dre, you start us off with the final thoughts, sir.
Oh, well, final thought, what I learned on today.
On today,
on
so churchy.
Today,
so churchy.
Is that everybody, how many bodies?
Everybody.
Shout out to Corey.
Take your time.
Needs therapy.
Yep. Yes, everyone needs to be therapized, absolutely.
Even the therapist.
Mm.
Every Monday, 1 o'clock.
Nice.
So with that being said, you got a spot open for Uptown?
Why did you?
I take it. I'll take it.
I can. I might have to refer Uptown out because I don't know if I have the capacity to handle all of his stuff. All
right, Mr. Uptown.
That's what she said.
Final thoughts after hearing
Yo!
That.
Yo! Yo, get the drill
and check. That's what she said.
I said I might not have the capacity to handle all of his stuff.
Uptown.
And then... I've been
my
telling
man,
them
my
all
man.
Night.
My man.
Stop talking.
My man.
And this is
my
why
man.
I want to sit in between them.
My man.
My final thoughts is my man.
My man.
You brought me into this situation.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever, Willis.
That's it?
Really?
That was my thoughts.
Wow.
My man. Yeah.
Wow.
Why not?
There was a lot of behind the scenes enlightenment, and it was just so amazing to hear. And I'm sorry you guys weren't able to be privy to it, but what my final thoughts are, therapy is not as scary as you might think. Yeah, we all can do the work and eventually get to our own individual breakthroughs, but there is, you wouldn't go to a chiropractor for a toothache, right? You go to professionals that are there to help you and assist you in your own personal growth. So I would say hit up Dr. Tay or any other professional that'll be able to assist
Absolutely.
You. Definitely Dr. Tay. Y'all heard it here first.
Get your checkbooks right if y'all gonna hit up Dr. Tay.
Right. So my final thought is basically, again, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I love to see us black women. I love to see it. It encourages other black women that thought that no one could relate to them.
Hey, girl.
When they see you, they have some kind of relation. You're like the black women's Dr. McStuffin. They're like, you're like,
I'll take it.
And also, I want to say that I'm glad that we have somewhere to go. I'm glad. Excuse me. Are you being rude?
Yes. Dr. McStuffin's down the backyard again.
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, what did you say?
Excuse me.
You thought I was the backyard again?
Let her finish.
You're talking my final thoughts.
That was rude. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I encouraged his rudeness. I apologize.
You know what my final thoughts is? My man. That's it. You know what's interrupting? My man. That's it.
Yo.
All right, Dr. T, you gotta take us home.
I got a point too. I'm gonna say something.
You said something about Doc McStuffins, and then
she's about to be mad prolific. Let's go.
She's gonna be like, I ain't coming back.
So
yeah.
About to be pretty.
No, I want you to say that. I just feel like mental health should be a part of hiring. You should do a mental check for every employee that gets hired, because a lot of times people are mental and they go crazy, and I had it happen before at a workplace, and I feel like every employee you should get your health check, office. You should get your PPD check, and you should get a mental health check for every job that you go to.
Mm-hmm. And some jobs they do, but
I think it's every job.
Yeah.
PPD and OPP.
No, not every construction site. We fine.
Even construction site.
No, we fine.
No. No.
You don't want me to work, do you?
That part. That part.
It's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way. Did I end with that last time?
I don't know.
It's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way. Like I might have.
Sounds good.
But it's okay to not be okay. And if you're listening to webinars and podcasts like RTI, and you feel like you can identify with what you're hearing, it's okay. There are resources. If you Google black therapist, you're going to get websites, you're going to get resources. So, and not saying that the RTI listeners are only melanated, but whatever you're going through, you can Google it and you can find help. And if you can't, reach out to the RTI host and they can get in touch with me or put you in contact with someone so that you can get help, because it's out there. Mm-hmm. It's out there.
Yeah, put your IG up there. I'm gonna put it up there, but
okay.
So that you know.
That's Dr. Tay, THATSDRTE on Instagram, on Facebook, and that is also my email. That's drtay@gmail.com. You can feel free to reach out to me. I am not currently in private practice, but I can absolutely point you in the right direction of people I personally believe are the bomb, people I graduated with, and yeah.
Can you give me a touch with Dr. House?
So, thank you so much, Dr. Tay, for coming back. We appreciate you. I don't even know what to say, the type of gracious thoughts and just benevolence that we've all learned today from you. And our last time when you were here, I think I want to bring you back.
I don't mind. You know I don't mind Ratchet being Poppy like the...
Then I think you should come back once every season.
I don't mind.
I'm just saying.
I don't mind being the RTI therapist. I don't mind.
Hey, let's get it.
Heard it
first.
Facts.
Mm-hmm. All right. So as always, guys, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you. We love you. I can say thank you. We look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you for having me. Always a good time with RTI family.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, and as you already know, Harlem Lou Skywalker.
First Lady Ramona.
Hollywood Dre.
He got stuck. He had to think about it. Like, oh,
Poppy.
Man.
Ratchet Poppy.
He was like, do I want to do it?
I didn't want
to. I know. He didn't want to. I forced it on him.
Have a great day and a better tomorrow. We love y'all.